Live from New York City, it's The Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about how food can cause cancer based upon how it's cooked, and how you know how far to cook something before it goes over that line from being okay to causing disease. Also, for women who have dysmenorrhea, that is a problem with menstrual cramps, very, very common, probably anywhere from 45 to 60% of all women in the United States who have a period suffer from this. I'm going to give you information on a study, double-blind study, that showed how to overcome that. And also today, how obesity is bad, yes, for your heart and for your lungs, but it's also, according to University of Cambridge, it's bad for your brain, what you can do about it. And a more in-depth discussion today about something that some people are now finding out about. It's been around a while, though. It's called NAD, and it can have an impact on reversing our aging. I'll explain how that happens. New research from Dr. Edward Rosnick. And doctors are overlooking the leading cause of premature death. That's premature death. Heart disease? No. Cancer? No. What is it? I'll get into that in detail. Plus, today I have no guests so that I can spend more time on important social commentaries. Today, from Chris Hedges, from TruthDig, Con versus Con. From Black Agenda Report, Glenn Ford, Hillary stuffs entire U.S. ruling class into her big, nasty tent. From Edward Curtin, Global Research, Professor Noam Chomsky lectures leftists on why they should vote for neoliberal, imperial warlock hawk Hillary Clinton. Oh, yeah. Now, on many occasions, I certainly agree with Professor Chomsky. I believe he's shared a lot of important insights. But on this issue, we will share a difference of opinion. Also today, I'm going to play some clips. And one of these clips is revealing, but it's what comes after it that will make it extremely interesting for people in this audience, because it could be the one way that Hillary Clinton is stopped. Now, I make no bones about it. What Hillary is a person to her friends or family. I cannot judge. What I can and should judge is what she has done through her policy positions to negatively impact people around the world, especially women, causing the unnecessary deaths and destruction of so many people. And yet she feels that this is what a good thing that qualifies her for president. You'll better understand what I'm talking about when I play the clips. And then when I read a document that you haven't seen, this document's extremely important. So we have a lot to share today. What if someone came up to you on a street and handed you a bar of silver, pure 99% silver, and said, would you give me $100 for it? You said, I don't know. Would you give me 50? Would you give me 20? Would you give me $10? Now, if you want to know its value, right there is a gold and silver shop. You can go into it and have it assayed and see that it's no joke. What do you think people would do? Well, you're going to find out, because we're going to show you when a long group of people from all ages, walks of life, what they said when offered what would turn out to be about $1,600 bar of silver, and they were offered as little as $10. Did they take it? You'll see. Let's begin. One of the most important features of our current understanding of science is that we now know that we can actually slow down, and in many cases reverse, many of the conditions of aging. For example, what is one of the most common things that occur to almost everyone as they age? Well, they begin to have less muscle mass. They begin to develop some of that creepy skin. They begin to have sags and bags, jowiness, where the weight of the face begins to fall down because they don't have the muscle structure, the tensile strength to hold it up, the collagen. They begin to have more fatigue, don't have the energy to do much, and frequently don't have the memory or the energy in their brain. They start to watch something, they go to sleep, they start to read something, they get tired. Now, this is all due to energy. So anything that can enhance energy is positive. And I just gave a lecture last night on this very topic where I asked a group of rather astute people, how many cells do you have in your body? Well, it's anywhere between 40 trillion and 100 trillion, depending upon your size and your age. Now, how many bacteria do you have in your body? Well, you have at least 10 and as much as 50 times more bacteria. Those two issues are very important. How many of those cells are damaged each day, meaning hit by free radicals, pro-inflammatory agents from your diet, whether it's French fries or hot dogs or pizza, or whether it's something like a glass of apple juice or beet juice or carrot juice or maybe a salad? They all have an impact on those cells. Well, they were guessing and were way off. In point of fact, you have approximately 10,000 gene alterations per cell every single 24 hours. Now, that means that the math is 10,000 times 100 trillion. So that's why we end up aging. Now, depending upon what you expose yourself to, you'll have a faster or slower aging process. Those who smoke or drink, quicker aging. Those that eat poor diet, quicker aging. Those who are under stress, those who are in a polluted environment, aging. So the aging. But then again, if we did nothing but to a more alkaline diet, starting your day with a nice glass of apple cider vinegar, about a teaspoon, or a lemon juice teaspoon, and drinking that down. Of course, always brush your teeth when you have anything highly acidic because it can erode the enamel. And sometimes people will suck on a lemon, not realizing you're damaging your gums and teeth. If you brush the teeth after you drink something acidic, it's fine. Or if it's very diluted, it's fine. In any case, that alkalizing also helps bring more minerals from your diet into your bones. That's good. And allows better absorption of some nutrients. And then if you have something in the way of a probiotic during the day, you recolonize the good bacteria. That's good. Now, what those two things do, it helps slow down how many gene alterations you have. Now, if you give up sodas, coffee, sugars, processed sugars, artificial sweeteners, any of the fried foods, animal proteins, gluten, dairy, you are bringing from 10,000 gene alterations per cell per day, probably, I'm guesstimating, down to around 2,000. Well, that means you're aging 80% slower than the average person's at the biological level. So that's part of the aging issue. What do you stop doing is bad? But then the other half of the equation is, what can you do to repair the damage from the choices you made that you shouldn't have? And one of these is understanding that there is an essential cofactor required for cellular energy transfer. It's called NAD. And that is very important in our aging process. Virtually every cell is involved. There is some good research done up at Harvard University that proved that you can increase NAD levels and can reverse some of the bad biological process of aging. And how it works is this, and this is the latest research from Dr. Edward Rosnick, that NAD works in two distinct ways to mitigate aging. In the first sense, it increases mitochondrial activity. That means the little energy factories that create energy in your body are better able to work. And then it activates a special element called sirtuins, S-I-R-T-U-I-N-S, that regulate your lifespan. Well, that's terrific, because the more or a higher level of NAD that you have, you're helping to restore your body's energy factories. It's actually a form of vitamin B3, the nicotinamide riboside. That's the simple way of explaining it. And with this advance, it's possible for aging individuals to increase their NAD plus cellular levels. And the nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, that's the NAD, is in every single cell. You need it for regulating genes that accelerate aging. And NAD also is important as a part of the transfer of energy released from fatty acids and glucose to the mitochondria to be converted into cellular energy. So when you age, you have less of it. And when you supplement, you have more of it. And therefore, you're going to age at a different level. See, NAD battles aging by activating key anti-aging enzymes. And those enzymes are called sirtins, or S-I-R-T-I's, one, or S-I-R-T-3. And they contribute to longevity by favoring controlling gene expression. They modulate multiple biological processes, and that's important. So just something to help people understand, we do have the science, we do have the understanding of how to complement the body so we don't have cellular senescence, which is the end of life. And we can do it by turning off inflammation, better regulating our metabolism. That means none of those sugary drinks, because that really throws your metabolism up and down. And stop all the things that have excitotoxins in them. And alcohol is a tremendously dangerous neurotoxin. It destroys brain cells like crazy, and that leads to neurodegeneration. So that's what you want, and NAD helps. Also, on the subject of food and how we eat it, how often have you been tempted or consumed some of that barbecued ribs? I was watching to see what the food channels, hoping that they would actually be smart enough or intuitive enough to realize an awful lot of Americans love to see a healthy food show instead of these massive amounts of sickening foods prepared in blood sport-like mindsets of heavy combat. You've got 10 minutes to, you know, win, and it's just absurd. They've made it into a gladiator sport instead of something that should be joyful and fun to watch. In any case, there's one on barbecuing, and some of these people take barbecuing real seriously. They'll barbecue something for 3 days. Well, you talk about blackened. That is charcoal almost, and people love to eat that stuff. Well, that burnt can cause cancer. In fact, any food that's burnt can cause cancer. And that's because the molecule, one type of molecule called acrylamide, acrylla, A-C-R-Y-L-amide, A-M-I-D-E. And when that chemical is there, it's toxic. So how do you get it? Well, we get it when we cook things at a high temperature. Okay. Then the construction of the acrylamide is when we want to brown something, let's say. So you want to cook something. There's an art to cooking it where you cook it high enough to kill any bacteria, but you don't cook it so high that you are darkening it. It's called the golden rule. And food cooked until it goes yellow, but not brown, and certainly not black. That means it's cooked enough to kill the bacteria in most cases. I'm talking about foods, not meats. But it's still okay. You're not going to form the acrylamides when it's yellow. You do form the acrylamides when it's brown, and certainly when it's black. So think of all the things that are brown or blackened when you cook them. When you're doing charcoal grilling, you're blackening it. When you're deep frying it, well, that's really creating acrylamides and hydrocyclic amines. And on that barbecue, there are all kinds of concerns when you're eating meat. And it's really two classes of problem. One is called polyacyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PHAs. And those have a lot of what are called benzene rings fused together, hexagonal rings. And they could cause cancer. And that's what you get when you're eating meat that's cooked high temperature. And that's why we get a lot of cancer, colorectal cancer, stomach cancer. You don't want that. Now, something good for the women in this audience who have had dysmenorrhea, which is a real severe amounts of cramps, and it comes from the Greek meaning difficult in monthly flow. It's a lot of pain, and sometimes it lasts as long as 2 days. How can you help it? According to this new study on vitamin D, that with 40,000 units for 4 days, and they were, or once a week, I should say, for 8 weeks, and another group took placebos, the group of vitamin D had a almost 70% drop in their pain. 70%. That's terrific. So dysmenorrhea, painful periods, vitamin D, that's the latest study. And if you're overweight, be aware, you could be doing a lot of harm to your brain. This is from Cambridge University, I'll quote it. Could too much weight be bad for the brain as well as the belly? New research suggests that being overweight or obese may trigger premature aging of the middle-aged brain. The study centered on how carrying excess weight might affect the brain's white matter, which facilitates communication between different brain regions. White matter, by the way, is the tissue is known to shrink with age. But the new study found that the amount of white matter in the brain of a 50-year-old overweight or obese person was compared to that of a 60-year-old lean person. So you're really 10 years, a decade, of prematurely aging your brain when you're overweight. Now that means for a person that's not been a long time overweight, what if you're overweight for a long period of time? Then your brain is much, much older than you were chronologically, in which case you'll be suffering from memory loss, cognitive decline, much younger, probably starting in your 40s. So, and finally, from Yale and Harvard Universities, today's smartphones, of course, everyone has one, but even our children are wired to this whole wireless technology. And most parents today would not do something intentional if they knew that, well, my kid could get cancer from it. Unfortunately, new studies are definitely linking cell phone radiation to health issues in children and the unborn babies carried by pregnant moms. The last thing you should do for a pregnant woman is carry a cell phone in your pocket or near your belly, because it's pulsing right in and can change the chromosomes and the DNA of your developing fetus. Now, there was a pediatric conference held at the Baltimore Convention Center. It was a forum for health experts to discuss the findings, and Yale and Harvard scientists and doctors were very vocal about the harmful cell phone radiation to the brain development of unborn children. A correlation was found between cell phone use during pregnancy and behavioral problems manifesting in the children as they develop. And cell phone radiation exposure linked to cognitive impairment and cancer was also discussed. This was part of the International Agency for Research on Cancer. So you do not want to be using a cell phone if you're pregnant. And that's the latest on science. So just want to share that with you. Well, we'll save our other thing for tomorrow on health, because I've got all these commentaries to get to, so we're going to take a little break and come back and start with some very insightful commentaries. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome everyone who's just joining us from all over the world and all of the different stations that carry this program. And for our listeners in New York City, this coming Saturday, we will be resuming our health support group. So this Saturday, we will be meeting for our normal three-hour discussion lecture in Manhattan, as we do this Saturday. It's no new people are allowed. We're right smack in the middle of our health support study group. I'll share those with everyone, what everyone did, and the results when it's complete in the fall. So Saturday, come back in. We're back for the new, right in the middle of our health support group. Several issues that arise that I'd like for us to address, all of us together. First, think for this just a moment. When the Democratic National Committee was found and Debbie Wasserman Schultz was found guilty of undermining Bernie Sanders in every way they could so that they could be guaranteed that Hillary Clinton would get the nomination, that's unethical. I don't know if it's illegal. I'm not a lawyer, but it's certainly unethical. If I were Bernie Sanders, I would have then said, we are demanding a halt to everything. I do not want any of my supporters to go anywhere. We want to announce that in many states, our research has shown that we would have won had they counted all the votes. And they should do a do-over. Absolutely. That's what should happen. But then the media attacked the source, but not the substance of the leaks. That should show you how much the media is complicit. It's embarrassing to see how biased the media are, both on the left and the right. And so the question then is, can we trust your typical liberal or democratic organizations and those who claim that they're for peace, democracy, and freedom around the world, and therefore the person who can best handle that, Hillary Clinton, here at home? Many of us say no. Jill Stein, yes. Bernie Sanders, with reservations, yes. Anyone else? Absolutely not. And during the presidential election cycle, liberals, according to Chris Hedges, display their gutlessness. Liberal organizations such as MoveOn.org become cloyingly subservient to the Democratic Party. Liberal media, epitomized by MSNBC, but also Mother Jones and many others, ruthlessly purge those who challenge the Democratic Party establishment. Liberal pundits, such as Paul Krugman, lambaste critics of the political theater, charging them with enabling the Republican nominee. And liberals chant in a way that is disregarding facts. Don't be like Ralph Nader, they claim. Yeah? Why not? I voted for Ralph Nader. Let me just summarize why I voted for Ralph Nader and was criticized by those in the liberal and progressive community for doing so. Well, if you vote for Ralph Nader, you're giving the election to George Bush instead of, in one occasion, to John Kerry. On another occasion, it was to America's vice president, Al Gore. But look at what Gore has done since, both positive and negative, and how he has profited tremendously from his positioning on the environment. But what actually has happened? What has changed? I would appreciate it if Gore would do something like this. You made over $500 million profit when Al Jazeera purchased Current TV. Why don't you take some of that money and go around America and set up some completely environmentally sustainable villages? Help them in a way that you can help them too. But that would be, if we actually saw people having quality of life in beautiful environments that is completely sustainable with progressive community involvement. Or go into an inner city. Go into one of the major inner cities like Detroit or Compton and take a block and show how you can completely de-ghettoize a community by bringing back jobs, by inspiring trades and skills, by helping people with any form of problem, emotional or addictive problems, and by sustainable agriculture, setting up assisted living centers and schools. You could do so much in just one block if you chose to. And then that becomes a model to inspire others. But that's not what we're seeing. But here's what we would not have had, in my opinion, if Ralph Nader had become elected but was rejected by the liberal community. We would not have had 9/11 because we wouldn't have had bases in Islamic countries like Saudi Arabia that resented our presence and therefore were motivated to attack us based upon that. We wouldn't have been, we wouldn't have had an offshoot of the Mujahideen, the original radical jihadist that we funded, we created. And that's not a secret, and that's not debatable. Everyone, including Hillary Clinton, acknowledges we created the Mujahideen, and from the Mujahideen, they became Al-Qaeda. They morphed from Mujahideen to Al-Qaeda, and then from the Al-Qaeda, and because we stayed in Iraq, and because we imprisoned hundreds of thousands of completely innocent people, or those who were innocent of terrorism, but they were actively trying to get us out. We were occupiers. I'm quite sure most people listening right now, if your country was occupied, if you could have your home or apartment broken at any time and your sons and daughters and fathers and mothers arrested, brutalized, raped, killed, imprisoned, tortured, you would fight back also. So most of these people had never been terrorists, but they didn't want to be occupied, understandably. We not only occupied them, we then completely destroyed their system. From that, from the prisons in Iraq and Afghanistan, emerged the individuals who would later form as ISIS. So it wasn't Barack Obama who founded ISIS. It was the Bush administration's policies that led to this. It was just a sequence of events. So we wouldn't have had 9/11. We wouldn't have had the bailout of Wall Street because we wouldn't have had casino capitalism. We would not have had the Glass-Steagall Act allowed to be what it was. There would have been people prosecuted on Wall Street. We would have had better environmental ideals. We would not have had the TTP or the TTIP. We would not have had the balkanization of Yugoslavia and other countries continuing around the world. We would not have invaded Libya. It would still be the number one society in all of the Middle East, dwarfing in its democratic principles with thousands of localized democratic committees that voted on everything. And when the money came in from oil, it went to everyone's bank account. Free education, free hospitalization. Women had absolute freedom. It was against law in Libya, for example, under Gaddafi, to insult a woman or to assault a woman. Women had the same rights and as men. And they had no crime. They had no terrorism. But look what we did. Look what Hillary Clinton caused to be done. And then look at Syria. If I told you about Assad in Syria, they will say he's a little Hitler. He killed his own people. Here's what they don't tell you. We sent provocateurs in there the same way we did with Libya. And we destroyed NATO and other factors working with NATO, especially the Wahhabi Saudi Arabia and in Qatar. They destroyed hospitals infrastructure. They created starvation. They created disinformation campaigns. They erased history. They balkanized and partitioned. They bombed civilian population. But what was Syria like prior to the invasion? Have you seen any videos on Syria before the bombings? No. Here's what Assad did for his people that would have put him in a different light. He constructed and restored over 10,000 mosques and 500 churches. He constructed and restored 8,000 schools and 2,000 institutes and 40 universities. He constructed more than 600 flats or apartments or houses for young people. He constructed and modernized more than 6,000 hospitals and clinics. He established 5 international industrial areas. He opened Syria and 60 international banks. He opened Syria to 5 telecommunication operators, like internet providers, and he gave licenses to 20 independent newspapers and magazines and 5 television stations by satellite. He developed a performance center for art, theater, comedy, tragedy. 20,000 Syrian actors were supported by Assad, and they achieved excellence award. His construction modernization of stadiums, sports halls, large global reputation, Syrian athletes, horseback riding is what they excelled at, and swimming and wrestling and gymnastics. From 2000 on, the economic situation of Syria is healthy at that time, while the economic crisis affected the world. Thousands of new operations. Syria was flush with restaurants, hotels, tourist cities, leisure centers, shopping centers, factories. The fall in unemployment from 2000 till 2011 was 20% in 2000, 12%, despite the rise in the number of people entering the labor market. He increased connections like electricity, telephones, drinking water, and sanitation to more than 1 million homes and apartments across the country. He reimbursed all debts of the country and increased agriculture and industrial capacity by 600%. Development of tourism. Syria was the third most visited Arab country in all that area. It was a tourist destination. And Syria had only 1% of illiterates, the best score of Asia and Africa. Right behind it was Libya, which was 88%. And he development of public transportation, airports, ports, buses, and prices he kept low. The constitution of thousands of associations for the poor and orphans and disabled protected them. Syria was the most important country in the region economically, politically, and militarily, and that was because of Assad. Now, Assad's hero was Gaddafi, and Gaddafi created the number one country for freedom, for prosperity, had the no unemployment, so to speak. It had great benefits, free education, free medicine. If you couldn't be helped there, they would send you to any hospital in the world. And when oil money came in, it went to a central account and was distributed to its citizens. And every single citizen got to vote on every single issue that impacted their lives. Thousands of these democratic groupings all over on every issue. Do you hear any of this? Does anybody take credit? Do we even have the decency or the ethics to show both countries before our invasion and then afterwards? Do you see how easy it is to manipulate through the media and only show one side of a story and not the other side? These countries were not our problem. They did not represent threat to us or to the world. So then we started with illegal sanctions and bombing and funding so many people who would go in there and do our dirty work. That was offshoots of all those people that came originally of what we did back in Afghanistan in the 1980s. So that's what we wouldn't have had today, because Ralph Nader would not have allowed nation changing. He wouldn't have allowed the agreement for a new century to take hold. He wouldn't have allowed the neocons to get away with any of this. He would have cut down military spending. We'd be having a balanced budget. We wouldn't have the military-industrial complex spending $1.6 trillion. We wouldn't have corporations getting away with tax evasion and paying no taxes. We wouldn't have environmental degradation. We wouldn't have the ghettoization of America. We wouldn't have had home foreclosures because we wouldn't have had a crash on Wall Street because he would not have allowed those on Wall Street to control the economy. So, okay, you won. What did you win? Can you be honest enough to take a look back and say, gee whiz, maybe I got it wrong? Well, you didn't say you're wrong then, and now you say you're not wrong when it comes to Hillary Clinton. You are. And who are you? Well, you are the liberal class. You refuse to fight for the values you purport to care about. You're trapped, you're paralyzed by the induced panic manufactured by the systems of corporate propaganda. The only pressure within the political system comes from corporate power, with no counterweight, with no will on the part of the liberal class to defy the status quo. As a result, we all slide deeper and deeper into corporate despotism. The repeated argument of the necessity of supporting the least worse makes things worse. Change will not come quickly. Chris Hedges says many times that it's going to take a decade or longer. I fully support that. And it will never come by capitulating to the Democratic Party establishment. We will accept our place in the political wilderness and build alternative movements and parties to bring down corporate power, but in the process we must detach from the Republican and the Democratic parties completely. No compromise. At the same time, they will do everything they can to make sure that democracy atrophies into a police state and our ecosystems unravel. Has anybody been paying attention that the last week in Louisiana, Mississippi, is the worst flooding in the country's history? And just a few weeks before that, it was in West Virginia, and then in Maryland, and then in Wisconsin? Do you realize that just in the last 2 days, they had to rescue 20,000 people in Mississippi who were in danger of dying? And that's just the beginning of the new norm. Now, here's something you may not have thought about. So the rains ultimately will stop, and there'll be a lot of houses that have to be destroyed because they're going to be infested with mold, and they'll be weakened and dry rot. But even for those that remain or have to be rebuilt, how long do you think the insurance industry is going to continue supporting these catastrophic insurance policies when they're going to be losing billions upon tens of millions of dollars? So it's just a matter of time, probably in the next 12 months to 24 months, when the insurance industry stop insuring your home if you're in one of these areas. So we're talking about whole states, Mississippi, Louisiana, West Virginia, probably California, and certainly it's going to be Florida. Then how many people are going to want to risk living there? So this is what happens when we don't put our energy and our resources into a new Marshall Plan on dealing with environmental issues. The rise of a demagogue like Donald Trump is a direct result of the Democratic Party's decision to embrace neoliberalism and become a handmaiden of American imperialism and sell out for corporate money. There would be no Donald Trump if there had been a Ralph Nader or Jill Stein or Rocky Anderson. But there is a Donald Trump because there was a Bill Clinton. And the Democratic Party had not betrayed working men and women with the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, destroyed the welfare system, nearly doubled the prison population, slashed social service programs, turned the airwaves over to a handful of corporations by deregulating the Federal Communications Commission, ripping down the firewalls between commercial and investment banks that led to a global financial crash and prolonged recession, and began a war on our civil liberties that has left us the most monitored, eavesdropped, photographed, and profiled population in human history, even exceeding the East German Gestapo. There'd be no Donald Trump if the Clintons and the Democratic Party, including Barack Obama, had not decided to prostitute themselves for corporate pimps. Con artists come in many varieties. On Wall Street, they can have Princeton University and Harvard University law school degrees, polished social skills, Italian designer suits that are priced in the tens of thousands of dollars. In Trump Tower, they can have cheap comb-overs, fake tans, casinos by the handful, and links with the mafia. If the Clinton Foundation were involved, they can wallow in hundreds of millions of dollars from corporate and foreign donors, including the most repressive governments in the world, exchange for political favors. Reality, they are all crooks. The character traits of the Clintons are as despicable as those that define Trump. The Clintons have amply illustrated they are as misogynistic, as financially corrupt as Trump. Trump is a less polished version of the Clintons, but Trump and the Clintons share the same bottomless guile, megalomania, pathological dishonesty. Racism is hardly limited to Trump. The Clintons rose to power in the Democratic Party by race baiting, sending nonviolent drug offenders of color to prison for life, and making war on the welfare queens, they said, and being ordered in. The Clintons do a better job of masking their snake-like venom, but they, like Trump, will sell anyone out. Now, I'd like for you to listen to this. This is a 6-minute piece. It's part one. The second part you are not aware of, and I'll show you how it all ties together for those of you who want to help stop Hillary and promote Jill. Listen in, please.
What on earth could be the reason behind Hillary Clinton's bizarre behavior in recent weeks? Weird seizures, psychotic facial tics, over-exaggerated reactions, coughing fits, strange lesions on her tongue. Is Hillary on the verge of a mental breakdown due to stress, or are her strange outbursts linked to a medical condition? Is Clinton suffering from actual brain damage, or are these odd manifestations just an expression of some kind of narcissistic personality disorder? I talked privately with psychologists and psychiatrists to try and answer this question, and here's what they told me. We know Hillary fainted and hit her head back in 2012, leading to a blood clot in her brain. In almost half of sufferers, this leads to side effects and neurological issues. According to neurologist Dr. Daniel Casiche, Hillary has post-concussion syndrome and cannot tolerate stress-inducing environments. Experts told me that this footage likely shows Hillary having a mild Jacksonian type of seizure caused by a side effect of the blood clot. Notice how shocked the reporter is by her behavior, and how Hillary tries to turn it into a joke, but then continues having the seizure. Notice how it was triggered by several different people talking to her at once, which is a known cause of seizures. Is this why Hillary refuses to give press conferences? We see similar traits in this footage, the crazy eye movements, the overreaction to external stimuli. The weird elongated bathroom break in the middle of a televised debate, which insiders said was a flare-up of problems from her brain injury.
And do we believe Secretary Clinton will be coming around the corner any minute?
Reports that she can barely stand up after giving a speech. The coughing fits, which is yet another side effect of strokes. Difficulty swallowing, choking, a garbled voice, again, all side effects of strokes. Guess what else is a side effect of strokes? Spontaneous outbursts of laughter that go on for longer than is socially comfortable.
I know Bernie Sanders said that, quote, the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails. But there are a lot of people who are not.
Well.
including FBI officials.
Some aspects of Hillary's freakish behavior could be explained by the blood clot, but others could be a manifestation of her notoriously unstable personality and even drug abuse. Her sudden, profound, and disproportionate bouts of rage, confirmed by former Secret Service agents, former K-9 handlers, and her own campaign insiders. An anonymous campaign aide told the New York Post that Hillary unleashed, quote, screaming childlike tantrums that have left staff members in tears and unable to work.
Byrne paints a disturbing picture of what he claims Hillary is like behind the scenes.
When something goes wrong, she seems to go right off the scale. Instead of trying to fix what the problem is, she goes right to anger and berates who she holds responsible for.
Byrne told me that as First Lady, Hillary actually hit a Secret Service agent in the back of the head with a Bible.
She became angry about something. She had a Bible in her hand. She didn't actually throw it at him. As he described it to me, she leaned forward and kind of punched him in the, hit him in the head with it.
He says the Clinton White House was like a battlefield, and the president showed up one morning with a black eye to prove it.
They even said they had to give her, quote, chill pills to calm her down. These outbursts are likely linked to years of persistent drug abuse. Her susceptibility to rage whenever she's challenged would also explain the complete dearth of press conferences.
Now, that's an examination of all these bizarre behaviors. My brother had multiple strokes. So many, they were uncountable. And that's because, as this audience has heard me discuss, and he actually discussed once on the program, he grew up in an environment where smoking was completely acceptable. Nobody was against it. And drinking, social drinking, and eating an unhealthy diet, not exercising. And then one day, in an accident, hurt his head, ended up with seizures. So I'm very familiar with what these look like, and it took him forever. Finally stopped the seizures when he started to protocol mime, but before then it was years of not doing it. And right in the middle of a conversation, there would be this distortion of the face and the eyes, and it would frighten people. Now here's what I have, and I want to share what I have. To the best of our ability, we have determined this is accurate. There's a leaked medical record of Hillary Clinton. It has the doctor's name, and it has some things blacked out, and which would rightly be so, like her account with the doctor number, her Social Security number, of course. But then it gets into having seen so many of these medical records, it says what I would normally see, and it is at the bottom, and this is by a leading person out at a major medical center. And here's what it says. Present complaint, blacking out for short periods of time, uncontrollable twitching, memory loss, fatigue. Then it goes into her medical history of how she's been getting worse. And then the medical examination. And here's what is important. I'll go to the bottom part. Diagnosis. This is what her physician is saying. Quote, complex partial seizures, subcortical vascular dementia. I discovered, quote, with the patient at length about the alternatives, and then they selected to present with medication. So we're not just dealing with seizures. We're dealing with blackouts. We're dealing with memory loss that is progressing, and now you have vascular dementia. It is my personal opinion that if a person were running for president and they released these medical records, which I believe she should, that she would not be physically fit to be president. It would be, this is progressive. This does not get better. It only gets worse. And also, if you're going to be the most powerful person in the world, and you're going to be faced with multiple inputs simultaneously, especially if you're in a, let's say, in a room with 10, 15, 20 people asking you questions, making statements, your brain can literally be overwhelmed and therefore puts her at risk. So I believe that she should be asked to step aside. And based upon our laws, the person that received the second most delegates, Bernie Sanders, would be the official nominee. But she's not going to do that. They will continue to hide the truth from the public. But sooner or later, this is going to come out. That's my impression. Now, to her suggesting that she is qualified And let's take a look at what she says was the cause of today's ISIS. Please listen in. This is short, but it's very, very revealing.
We also have a history of kind of moving in and out of Pakistan. I mean, let's remember here, the people we are fighting today, we funded 20 years ago. And we did it because we were locked in this struggle with the Soviet Union. They invaded Afghanistan, and we did not want to see them control Central Asia. And we went to work. And it was President Reagan, in partnership with the Congress, led by Democrats, who said, you know what, sounds like a pretty good idea. Let's deal with the ISI and the Pakistani military, and let's go recruit these Mujahideen, and let's great. Let's get some to come from Saudi Arabia and other places, importing their Wahhabi brand of Islam so that we can go beat the Soviet Union. And guess what? They retreated. They lost billions of dollars, and it led to the collapse of the Soviet Union. So there's a very strong argument, which is wasn't a bad investment to end the Soviet Union, but let's be careful what we sow because we will harvest. So we then left Pakistan. We said, okay, fine, you deal with the stingers that we've left all over your country. You deal with the mines that are along the border. And by the way, we don't want to have anything to do with you. In fact, we're sanctioning you. So we stopped dealing with the Pakistani military and with ISI, and we now are making up for a lot of lost time.
Okay. First, we didn't stop dealing with Pakistan. We were giving them at least $1 billion a year with the full knowledge that they had nuclear weapons and they had an unstable environment with a lot of radical jihadists, many of whom were completely armed and deadly because the United States had been funding them, training them through the CIA. Now, listen to what she said. She said, we're reaping what we sowed. She said very clearly, and she said it in another tape that I also have, that what we are seeing today, we created. All right? Then why would she go about working with the CIA and Ambassador Stevens to take Gaddafi's arms, which were massive amounts, and that he had bought from America and other countries, and then smuggle them through the Benghazi mission into both Turkey, into Syria, and then directly into Syria in different protected ports to be used by, you guessed it, the al-Nusra group, or our moderate terrorist, which we found out beheaded a 12-year-old boy. And our moderate terrorists have been engaged in all forms of gas warfare and slaughters of innocent civilians. So how does she reconcile the gee whiz, look what we created back then, and now look what we've created today? So the United States has been funding different groups, training them, giving them money, giving them weapons, and look at the outcome. We're going to be seeing this into the future unless someone gets into office, like a Jill Stein, that would stop this. Bernie Sanders, unfortunately, would not stop it. He has the same foreign policy program as Clinton, but they both are neocons when it comes to foreign policy. He supports Saudi Arabia. Now, you heard her say Wahhabism. You mean you said Wahhabism back then? Is that the same Wahhabism of today that will behead people, that will stone gays to death, that will give women no rights, that will crucify people, that will invade other countries with jihadists, as they're doing in Syria? Is that the same? So we're talking about the same country, the same ruling family, where you at least acknowledged that they were, we were getting our terrorists to fight in Afghanistan from these countries. But then you didn't say, oh, and these are the same Wahhabists and same terrorists and same ruling monarchy and same misogynist bunch of people that we have been funding and buying weapons, selling them weapons, and buying their oil, and putting them on the UN Committee on Human Rights, letting them head it. Boy, that's good, isn't it? Do you see the contradictions? Do you see the duplicity? Do you understand how serious it is? And yet not a word about asset forfeiture, spying on Americans, the National Defense Authorization Act, nothing at all about how bad we have become against our own innocent civilians in the United States and the deplorable condition of our veterans. And by the way, someone ought to remind those good corporate Democrats or corporate liberals, it's the same Hillary Clinton who had a group of people go when her husband was in office and the veterans were having committee hearings on Gulf War syndrome and denied that there was a link when they knew full well that there was. She is no friend of the Gulf War vets. She, in fact, denied their suffering, and as a result of official denials, clear up the chain of command, the veterans went 20 years without being helped. And now there's an awful lot of them who are homeless, suicidal, they're in poverty, they're in jail. So just remember all this. If you should forget history, remind yourself to take a look at their actual background. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.